seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
And we're live. Welcome along to Golf Weekly. Nathan with you in the presenter's chair. For now, Joe Molloy is late. This is why we don't always do Golf Weekly, because sometimes things just don't fall into place. But we have no choice right now because we've got two very special guests here. Joe, when he arrives, will probably step into this chair, but he's been golf perving overly over the past few days, so he's a bit worn out. But hopefully he'll arrive at some stage. Peter Lawrie is here, though. How are you?
Hello, Nathan.
And Robbie Cannon is with us, live in studio, looking suitably nervous.
I'm okay, not too bad.
As I repeated to Peter, it was mostly aimed at Peter. We are live, so we can libel people, Peter. So yeah. Let's just keep it down. The perv has arrived, golf perv, sorry, Joe Molloy, before I actually libel him. He's going to arrive in very shortly. There's a lot to talk about. Robbie is well-known in Irish golf circles, very talented amateur golfer, and also very much involved in the backroom team with Shane Lowry. So there's a lot to chat about.
Yeah.
Had a good year?
Great year. Amazing. I guess took a few weeks to come to terms with the win and the enormity of it, but yeah, it's been brilliant, and he's played well the last couple of weeks, which is great as well. So,
were you on the party circuit as well?
I think I did 5 in a row.
Good man.
I actually started on the Saturday night because I was 100% convinced it was all over, and went for a few pints with Gary Murphy, went with Bo and Connor Ridge and a few of Connor's friends, and they were a little bit apprehensive, but I was like, when I seen the forecasts and I seen who Shane was playing with, I just said, I can't see him losing it. So I was very confident. And we had dinner on Saturday night with Shane, and he was just in such a calm and collected mood that I thought it was in the bag. You can never be 100% certain, but as good as.
And do you tell him, all right, Shane, you off early night. This is the advice from your strength and conditioning coach. We're all going on the lash.
No, he was just very focused. Like, we had dinner, and he just, as I said, he was very relaxed, very calm, and just he was just watching a bit of the highlights from that day, watching his 63, which is it's the finest round of golf I've ever witnessed, especially in a major.
Yeah, we did have that debate. I think we're going to have a proper. We might get Dermot Gleeson someday as well, and add some historical context to, was that the best round of golf any Irish golfer has ever produced? There's probably Harrington final round at Birkdale, McIlroy Congressional, but considering it was at Port Rush, that Saturday 63 has to be right up there.
Yeah, and it's not an easy golf course either. I've played it a lot over the years. I'm sure you've played it.
Played it quite a few times.
It's not an easy golf course off them back tees. It was just sensational. His birdie on 16 was, I was behind the back of the green, and when that went in, like, the crowd, it was just like, it was like a football atmosphere in Croke Park. And I watched his pitch shot on 17, hit about 5 foot. I didn't even watch the putt, I knew he was going to hold it. Just went on down 18. And he was very unlucky not to birdie 18 as well. Like, he had an unbelievable putt there. But yeah, it was incredible. He didn't hit a bad shot.
And is your work done by the time it comes to Thursday morning and he tees off?
Oh yeah. Majority of my work with Shane is done off season and then off weeks. So he's on an off week this week, so he was in yesterday. He was in on Tuesday as well. So he's day off today. Today's Thursday, yeah, so day off today, and he'll train again tomorrow. So we do a lot of work in them off weeks. Tournament weeks, then he might do 1 to 2 sessions depending on how busy a week it is. So, but yeah, majority of my work is done off season and off weeks.
All right, we will get into a lot more about that and about your amateur career, maybe the state of amateur golf in Ireland as well in a couple of moments. But we are here, of course, with thanks to La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort, Irish owned by FBD Hotels and Resorts. 3 18-hole golf courses, the Europe, Asia and America, and a 6-hole par 3 located near Mijas, state-of-the-art spa and 107-bedroom hotel. And we have been giving away for the last few weeks a very special prize of a 3-night stay for 2 with flights and 2 rounds of golf on your choice of the 3 brilliant golf courses at the La Cala Resort to a Golf Weekly and Off the Ball listener. And we have picked our winner, Peter.
Have we?
We have.
Great.
Andy Mackey. If you're watching, Andy, well done. At Andy Mackey 24 on Twitter. He entered every week, so he's a committed diehard listener, so he deserves this prize. He told us his favourite golfing memory was Graeme McDowell professing his love for cold beers.
Wow.
Are you not aware of this?
No.
What?
I'm shocked.
He's aware of this. He's aware of this. You've seen the, you've never seen the Graeme McDowell PGA Tour video?
No.
Oh my God.
I know.
Right,
I
second we get out of here.
I haven't seen it either, to be honest.
Nonsense.
But I know that Graeme likes a beer, so.
Nah, this there's no way this wasn't the talk of the locker room. So this video, in fairness, it is one of these things that I was about to bring up with Graeme McDowell because our office like to chat about it quite a bit. So he did this video behind the scenes, a sort of MTV Cribs style video for the PGA Tour website, probably 4 or 5 years ago now. And it's just glorious. It's McDowell at his very, very best. So he's talking about his favourite film. There's a lot of good films out there.
Did he go for The Shawshank?
Social Network.
Oh.
Though I think he may have gave Shawshank a bit of a mention. Mentioned the cold beers quite a bit. Asked, had he any tattoos? Not a tattoo kind of guy.
Nona Blue?
Mentioned the Nona Blue. Oh, it is just fantastic. So it's kind of gained a little bit of traction online, and particularly around our office for just... I love McDowell, but this is just cheese fest. Fantastic. It is glorious. So I thought at the... I thought maybe he's aware of this and it's sort of iconic status. And I was about to, up at the open, during one of the interviews, bring it up. And the interview went a different way, so it didn't happen. But somebody told me afterwards that there were four fans walking around Portrush with T-shirts of McDowell taken from the video with cold beer written on it. And they went up to get a photo. And I don't think he was overly impressed.
Ooh.
So I'm glad I didn't go down that route.
You should have.
I can't believe you haven't seen this video.
No, I can't. I'm dying to watch
this.
This
could be fresh new material for Michael Hoey for the
Christmas
party.
This will keep Hoey going for years. Don't bring up the Christmas party. It's a touchy subject with Peter. So well done to Andy Mackey. You have won yourself 3 nights stay for two people with flights, 2 rounds of golf on one of the 3 brilliant courses at La Cala Resort in Mijas. It is Irish owned by FBD Hotels. So congrats to you, Andy. And all the best on your trip. So... the week that was in golf, Victor Perez won the Alfred Dunhill Championship. The team event, Peter, which of course is the most important one.
Of course.
Won by Tommy Fleetwood and Ogden Phipps. Who's Ogden Phipps?
Haven't a clue, but I know Rory and his dad got beaten on a countback.
Which may explain a few things. Does it explain a few things? So Rory had a few comments to make after the pro-am. He was a little bit pissed off, to put it mildly. He said, I don't think the courses are set up hard enough. There's no penalties for bad shots. It's tough when you come back when it's like that. I don't think good golf is rewarded as well as it could be. Happened at the Scottish Open as well. I finished 13, 14 under for the week and finished 30th again. It's not a good test. I think if the European Tour want to put forward a really good product, the golf course and the setups need to be tougher. So he's referencing the European Tour as a whole there. It's pretty strong stuff from McIlroy towards the European Tour. I did read very quickly afterwards that he had been beaten on a countback and maybe wasn't fully aware of how the countback worked. It went on the pro score.
Yeah.
So maybe that fed into his annoyance. The climb down was quick, even for Rory standards. Within 24 hours, he was on Instagram saying, I was venting yesterday, but I can assure you it came from the right place. I understand voicing concerns about golf course setups in Europe to the media at a pro-am event on benign links courses wasn't the right place to do it or the right people to talk to about it. Strategy, course management and shot making are important aspects of tournament golf that are being slowly taken out of the game at the top level, not just in Europe, but worldwide. I would personally like to see tougher setups in Europe because it will produce better, more complete young players in the future, and that can only be a good thing for the game. Most importantly, our Ryder Cup chances. Did he have a point? Is the European Tour too easy?
He does have a point, absolutely. He has a point in relation to the likes of Challenge Tour golf courses being their setup. But that tournament in particular, it can't be set up difficult. I've played it for many, many years. You're playing with amateurs. You have to get around the golf course with time and speed. So it's set up like you would play it on a day-to-day if you were paying a green fee. They took away one or two flags, but they can't put the flags in crazy positions because of they have to play 3 courses over a number of days. So look, it's a difficult golf course for him to say that. I'd agree with him in relation to the Scottish Open. I was very surprised that he went to play the Scottish Open. Again, it's a resort style golf course. Mm. It's an easy golf course. And these young lads are used to playing easy golf courses. They're used to playing, smash it down the fairway, chip it close, hold the putt. That's what golf has become. So for him to give out about that is really, that's what American golf courses are like in general, unless you come to a major where it's set up a little bit different. So look, you know, he needs to remember where he is and what tournaments he's playing.
Joe Molloy has joined us. Sorry. No rush, Joe. You take your time there.
Sorry, how are you, sir? How are you doing, Peter? How are you doing?
Hello, Joe.
Apologies. Otherwise engaged. Team of us and all that.
Oh absolutely. Yeah. Were you practicing your golf swing?
No, we were doing a thing out of Vodafone for Ireland against Russia.
Okay.
You weren't golf perving?
No. Rugby all the way. I can guess what you're talking about. I heard the end of your conversation there.
Rory McIlroy. I guess it was the timing that actually...
That's killed him, yeah.
...has killed him, because it is the one event of the year that is purposely set up to be fairly straightforward for everybody.
Yeah, I would agree with Peter. I think you can't set that tournament up too difficult with the AMs, because I think they're long enough rounds as it is, isn't it?
Like 6 hour rounds.
Hours. So if you have heavy rough, you're going to add another half hour onto that. I think the Scottish Open was set up too easy. I think a Lynx course, it's obviously going to be defended by the wind. There was no wind, but I think there was very little rough that week as well. So. Yeah, it was probably a surprising decision to play that one, but he had his schedule this year all mapped out to play, obviously to be peaking for the British. So,
The average scoring on the European Tour is 15 under. The average scoring on the PGA Tour is 18 under for winners. So,
yeah,
is the PGA Tour noticeably more difficult?
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
That's the defence they were saying this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think what you'd say about the PGA Tour is the greens are probably better than in Europe, and they're more standard, so hence you probably hold more putts. But on easy golf courses, we all know it's a putting competition, and hey what, Rory is a, he wouldn't be known to have held his fair share in his time. So that's what I see it as, and he's frustrated. He probably was very frustrated at himself and his dad didn't win. It was a great opportunity and a lovely event to play with your dad. I've played with my brother 3 times, so it's great. But to get into a position to win with your dad would have been great. But then, he was turned around and said, look, you didn't win because, unfortunately, Rory, your score wasn't as good as the other pro score.
His dad played great. I watched a good bit of it. His dad was amazing.
Yeah. They did a comparison of the two swings. Backswings were very similar.
Yeah.
Rory and his dad. Obviously, Rory gets a bit faster once he gets moving.
Just a little bit.
Just a bit, yeah. But the backswings are incredibly similar.
Yeah. Yeah, his dad played great. A few birdies that were net eagles and stuff. So I think his dad kept him in it.
So Rory's apologised, though, hasn't he? Or he's apologised.
Oh, he came straight out and within 24 hours and was on Instagram, basically. Not totally rowing back, just admitting that it probably wasn't the right time.
Yeah.
Fair play to Rory, because this is a pretty quiet and dull time in golf. And we've had 3 weeks in a row of McIlroy saying something somewhat controversial, something of a talking point, and kind of keeping everybody going.
So do you just read it as he was peeved?
I think so, yeah. I think he was frustrated. And I tell you what, it's a bad tournament on behalf of Johan Rupert. Johan Rupert puts an awful lot of money into the Dunhill. And he doesn't like people talking badly about his tournament.
Does he have the nub of a point about the European Tour generally? Not obviously...
Because the numbers, you touched on them there. Nas Ferratu is this genius on Twitter who's very much on top of world rankings and all the nerdy stuff. So he had the European Tour 16 under, PGA Tour 18 under. But looked at the more difficult events, the stronger events, and it actually does flip that the European Tour, the winning score generally... 19 under, PGA Tour 18 under, and for that tie 26th to tie 30th, the European Tour 9 under, the PGA Tour 6 under, which suggests that in the tougher, what should be the tougher events with the better fields, it is a bit easier on the European Tour.
Mm. Not a huge difference though, is it?
But like, if you go through a schedule, right, of the European Tour, and you look at the tournaments, and you go down it, I could tell you exactly, looking at the schedule, what golf tournaments are going to be set up exceptionally difficult. You know, every tournament that we play in the UK is always set up with really, really strong rough. French Open is always set up very difficult. And if they get bad weather, it's probably 8-9 under wins the tournament. Germany used to be set up very easy. So it was a scoring fest of 22, 23 under. Italy, the same. Spain, unless you were playing in Valderrama, it was an easy setup. And you could go on through the schedule and say what setup hard and what setup difficult. So by him saying that, I don't really agree with it to a point. There is some tournaments that are set up very easy, and unfortunately the Dunhill is one of them.
The problem for Rory is that he leaves himself wide open when he makes a statement like this, because the last time Rory played a links event in tough weather, look what happened.
To defend him a little bit.
Oh, here we go.
He has to defend him because he's now out there with Shane and is looking for his lifts home.
I'll be brutally honest. To defend him from travelling with Shane on the US tour for a few years and the European tour, the standard on the US tour is definitely a lot higher.
Of course.
Just the depth. So each player, quality player. It's just...
Would the courses be more difficult?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
They would?
Yeah.
Okay.
The ones that I've attended.
In what way? Is it just the speed of the greens? The rough being up?
Rough, pin positions, length of course, everything.
Oh, well, then he has a point. If that's your experience, then Rory does have a point.
I think he has a valid point, but I think maybe the timing was...
It was terrible. Look, you can't do it after a pro-am. You can't do it after a pro-am.
I think that's... I quite like that about Rory, that he's quite honest. If he was the other way, he'd probably be
boring.
So I like that he displays his personality at times. So.
Could the European Tour have tougher courses than tougher tests?
I just think this week the Dunhill, you can't set that up the way it is. Like that it is defended by the wind, and it wasn't that windy last week. I think the Scottish, there's probably some questions to be asked there. They need to set that up tougher.
And generally.
Like Peter said, there is going to be courses that are kind of resort kind of courses that are going to be birdie fest. But you have that on a couple of courses in the US as well.
Yeah.
And then you have courses like Valderrama that they play most years. That's always going to be quite tricky. Not overly long, but tricky, tough greens, slopey greens. If you miss the wrong side of the fairway, you're either chipping out or playing away from the green. So it is. It's very much horses for courses, but I just think the quality of golfer, the strength of depth in the US is much stronger in America. But then you look at the Challenge Tour every week, the scoring is scary. You know what I mean?
Because they're playing on resort style golf courses, and there's nothing that the European Tour can do because they'd have to pump too much money into a tournament to get it to a decent standard that it's very difficult. They arrive a couple of weeks beforehand and try and get the greenkeepers to set up the course quite difficult, but it's nearly impossible purely because you have to put in fertilizer into the rough to get that up thickened, get the greens good and firm. You can't do it because the golf course then has to turn around on the Monday morning. They're open for green fees.
You do often hear, but maybe more from those involved in the marketing side of golf, that punters want birdies. They want birdie fest. They want to see good, positive golf. And you do wonder how true that is, because if it's too easy, do you actually see that test? Is McIlroy's problem that the easier the course, the more of a leveler it is, that actually he doesn't get to show his full range of talents if the course is pretty straightforward?
Absolutely, because his driving and his iron play is at such a high level that the harder the golf course is, obviously, the better for him. So I can understand where he's coming from in that regard as well.
God bless him. Keep it coming.
He's keeping us in business.
I would do a Rory press conference every Tuesday and just let him at it. Yeah. This, I think, was his quickest retraction. Within 24 hours.
Yeah.
It was. JP was the winning caddy as well.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It just must be so tough to come off a golf course when you're fuming and not say something stupid. Genuinely.
It's great that he gave so much of a damn, though, that he's out of the individual reckoning. But to try and win it with his dad was obviously going to be this huge thing. You feel pretty good about it now that you've got something that he really wants? You have that team event?
No. Don't be silly.
Your mate that you won it with?
Yes. Kieran McManus.
Has won it twice?
Yes.
Which would lend us to believe that maybe...
He carried me. You're right.
He's the link to the quality golf around the three courses.
There you go. He carried me the whole way.
Right. We are here with thanks to La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort, Irish owned by FBD Hotels and Resorts. Reminder, Andy Mackey, you are the winner of that 3-night stay for two with flights and two rounds of golf for of your choice. So, your career then. We'll chat more about Shane and your success at amateur level. For people who maybe don't follow the Irish amateur circuit hugely, you're still playing quite a bit?
Yeah, I played a few tournaments this year. I didn't play very well. It was probably my worst season in a long time. But yeah, still playing. Won the close last year. I've won three championships over kind of a 10-year period. And people always ask me, why don't you turn pro? Because I've won three events over 10 years, that's why. Whereas the guys that have made it on tour, like they're winning three, four championships over a kind of 12 to 18 month period.
And what was it again, Robbie, for people who wouldn't be too au fait with the amateur scene? There was a West of Ireland.
Yeah, so there's six major championships in Ireland, West, East, North, South, and then you have the Irish Amateur Open and the Irish Amateur Close. That's the big six.
And what have you won?
I've won the South of Ireland, which was the first one I've won, and I've won the Irish Amateur Open, and I've won the Irish Close.
The Irish Close. I'm sorry, I thought it was a West one year, no.
I was beaten in the final in the West. That's the one that got away.
That was so far.
Myself and Robbie have something in common.
Go on.
We both won the Irish Close Championship.
Where's that held?
All different venues.
Okay.
Yeah, I won it in the European Club last year.
Very good. So. Is the South in Lahinch? It traditionally was.
Always in Lahinch, yeah.
Right, that's a nice course to win on.
Yeah, amazing, and the people down there are just so nice. It'll probably be the sweetest win I've ever had because they used to have a champions dinner and I won, and obviously first win you're thinking, okay, let's get back to my home club Balbriggan, let's have a few drinks. But then somebody tapped me on the shoulder and says, we have a champions dinner that you have to attend, and I was like, okay. So I was a little bit unsure about that, but then once it actually started to happen, like, it was like such a special night. I'm so lucky to have that. A lot of the members are there, past captains, past champions are invited as well from kind of the year. So if you won in 89, 79, blah, 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 you'd be kind of...
I'm not surprised, because our experience down there for the Irish Open was that it was a genuinely special place, very friendly, warm, not pretentious, a great place.
Yeah, it was an amazing night, and I think they've done away with it, which I was a bit sad to hear, and I've actually recommended that they try and get that back, because it's such a special experience for the champion to have. So
not a bad role of honour either of players who've won the South.
Yeah, it's a good list down there, and yeah, you're right, Joe, it's a special place. I find when you get out on the golf course, I kind of, when you first see the sea on the third, on the fourth tee, looking down onto the sixth green, it's just, it can really distress somebody if you need it.
Yeah. So those weeks, because I don't really follow amateur golf the way we probably should, you know, we're watching PGA Tour mainly and European Tour and majors. Is that like you pitch up at the start of the week? Is it just match play, and you work your way through from first round through to final, or what's the format of these events?
Each one is different, but the quality of players, you have to prepare well, and this is probably something that I struggled with this year. I didn't get my preparations right because I was busy with work. We had a good run with Leash in the football, and then obviously with Shane winning. Just everything was just kind of, the golf was put on the back burner. But yeah, you generally turn up, play a practice round. Some guys will play two practice rounds. Some of these guys are full-time amateurs. I'd say there's probably 40, 50 guys who are full-time at it. Some of the tournaments are two rounds qualifying. So the West would be round one, round two, qualifying, stroke play, top 64, win to match play. Same with the Close, South, North. The stroke play Irish Amateur is four round stroke play, and then the East of Ireland is four round stroke play.
Right. Do you have caddies?
You have caddies. I didn't have a caddy for the Close last year, and the previous two wins I had caddies for most of it. It's not a requirement.
And how many, when you look at that sort of elite amateur scene in Ireland, how many are like yourself who are full-time working professionals playing golf on the side, and how many are almost full-time amateurs?
A very small percentage would be working amateurs.
Right.
So it's funny, when the last couple of wins that I had, I was getting a lot of texts and congratulations, one for the working am, which is interesting, but it's a very small percentage.
So how do the rest of them survive? The students?
A lot of them would be students, but then there's like a lot of kids that would be either take a year off school before they go to college, or they take a couple of years after college. So I guess some of them might work in the winter, a part-time job. Some of them might be funded by parents or golf clubs, or like the GUI, like the top players who are on the national panel, they're very well looked after by the GUI. I went for 2 weeks to South Africa with eight of us there in February. Everything paid for, amazing trip. And then a lot of the bigger events throughout the year, the GUI will send squads of players and pay for everything. So if you are in that elite kind of 8 to 10, then it won't cost you a whole lot to play in all these events.
Some of the clubs actually look after the young lads coming up, so they'd have a you'd have to vouch for your expenses going to the tournaments, but some of the golf clubs that they're members at would be either the golf club or a few members would get together and throw in a few quid.
Right.
Because these are young lads who are starting up and they're starting really the professional game as amateurs and working their way up. So they're treating it as professionals. They do everything as a professional would. Practice rounds, get into the tournament and stuff like that. So
you mentioned there that the guys who probably could be thinking about turning pro are the players who can win three or four of those major amateur events over the space of a 12 to 18 month period where they can really start to dominate. James Sugrue won the Amateur Open this year, but have there been those type of players, young players coming through over the last 5-6 years?
I think the professional game has got so much stronger. You've probably obviously noticed this the last kind of 5 to 10 years. There's been a couple of guys that I would have thought would have done better, and they haven't. Guys that would have won several tournaments, big tournaments in the amateur game, and just didn't when they got to the professional game. They just struggled for one way or another. One kind of common denominator I see with the guys who tend to struggle, they tend to change too much too fast. So they change coach, or they change fitness guy, or they change physio, try to change their swing, change equipment. And that's probably something I've done this year as well, but too many changes with equipment and stuff like that. The guys who tend to do well don't really change a whole lot. Like you can see with Shane, he hasn't changed a whole lot over the years, either as Rory. But it's getting harder and harder to predict who's going to make it.
How far are the longer amateurs hitting the ball now?
Everyone's different, but it's getting out there 300 anyway, definitely.
Oh, is it? Yeah. What do you hit it?
I would say I'd be slightly longer on average for 40-year-old guys. Not too bad. I've actually got longer as I've got older, probably from slightly better technique, better equipment, and a bit of fitness work, combination of everything.
Go on.
but yeah, like
you'd be what, 280, 93?
I'd say I'd probably carry it 285, probably. Yeah, so okay. Rolling out for about 300.
Okay.
So
wow.
There's no real difference. These young guys, they all hit it, you know, the same length as the pros hit it. Mm. There's no real, they've built themselves up. They're probably either working with Robbie or somebody like that who have got them into a situation where their swing speed, their strength, their ability is so much better than what it was many, you know, a good few years ago.
And what would be the big, I know you mentioned about changing too much when they turn pro, but what would separate you or the top amateur guys from the pros? Would it be the putting? Is it short game? Is it length? Is it a myriad of things?
I've been extremely fortunate. So I played at Rory when he was 15 in the West of Ireland the first two rounds. And I had a caddy with me, my mate Dave at the time. And on the fifth fairway, I turned around to him and I said, this guy's going to be a superstar. I knew then. I knew after.
What age were you then?
So Rory's
10 years younger.
Yeah, so I would have been
25.
25.
And where was the course?
Ross's Point.
Okay.
I'll never forget it.
One.
I just knew. You just knew he had it all. And that was the first time I played him. So after 4.5 holes, he just had it.
Yeah.
He just had that X factor.
Well, you were in match play with him?
No, qualifying.
Qualifying.
He shot 60, 67, 68 in a decent breeze in a canter. And then a few years later, I was lucky enough, I played with Shane in the same tournament, same qualifying. And he was the same. You knew after 5 or 6 holes, this guy has it all. Mm. They didn't hit many bad shots. Their curve on the ball was very, very small. Their worst shot was not that bad. And he and Shane shot similar scores, 67, 68 in the canter.
Did you say
it? Won that tournament that year.
They were just
so far ahead of the rest.
Did you say to the 15-year-old Rory, you're going to be super? Didn't want to give him an ego.
I think he knew. I think he knew. Because he had the strut.
Did he?
Shane had the strut as well. Like Shane was so confident, he was only a kid, but he was such a nice kid as well, and Rory was such a nice kid. Mm. They just had it all. They just had that X factor. Mm. And since then, haven't seen a whole lot of it since. They were just exceptional cases, right. And it's proved to be correct. So
yeah,
it's a great thing for Irish golf that even though Rory turned professional at a young age, that he went on the circuit. He's played at so many of the great courses around Ireland at a young age. And like, I always think of going out to the island with my father-in-law, and everybody there would talk about Rory playing in the island when he was 17, and the 10th hole, which is this dogleg right, that, you know, everyone's driving straight down the left, like, oh, Rory McIlroy, when he was 17, just went straight over the corner. He's the only person who's ever done it. He's the only person who's ever done it.
It's true. Even at Killeencastle, you can't play the first without someone going, see the bunker on the far right there. Rory went over that and then wedge on. And it's a way of actually, it's a good way of explaining to people the gap between mortals and pros.
And the thing is, it could have been downwind that day as well, but it just adds to the story.
Mystique, yeah.
The amateur setup then, and you're mentioning there about being away with Irish squads and the GUI very much, you know, treating their elite amateurs very well. You're 40, so you're at a stage where you obviously decided you're not going to turn professional. Age clearly then doesn't come into it at the amateur level at all in Ireland. That you're at a level, are you, with those 19, 20, 21-year-olds who are coming through?
For selection purposes, I would say, being honest, I'd say you'd have to do maybe a little bit more. You'd probably have to win a tournament. And I would agree with that because, like, the policy of the union, obviously, they're trying to pick the best team, pick the best players to do well in home internationals, nations, tournaments. But also they have a little bit of a remit to try and produce the professionals of the future. So I lost out on a selection. I won a tournament and I lost out in selection, but the guy who got in ahead of me was an up-and-coming guy. And even though I was disappointed, I can understand the selection process.
There's obviously a lot of people looking at what's going on then at Irish golf and young golfers as to why the conveyor belt has sort of stopped. But the way you talk there about McIlroy and Lowry is that, like, they're self-made in a way, that whatever they had at 15, 16, 17, there was something in them. They had this attitude that they could go right to the very top. That, do you feel it's just a case of waiting for the right personality to come around, or is there more that can actually be done to drag through those young players that they can actually make it on the European Tour?
Yeah, it's like James Sugrue. I played home internationals with him last year as my foursomes partner, and we won 2.5 out of 3. He hits it very, very straight, doesn't hit that many bad shots, great ball striker, very tidy around the greens, good putter. He's ticking off a lot of the boxes. Again, he doesn't like to change too much, has had the same coach for a while. I think he'll probably look at things, how he can get a little bit better. But I don't think he'll change too much. But he definitely has a chance. And Keelan Rafferty is like +6 handicap, which is extraordinary. And he could get to +7 the way he's playing. He's kind of been a late developer. So he's kind of mid to late 20s. He's came on the scene the last kind of 18 months from being an okay player, just like kind of doing okay in tournaments, to obviously he's won a couple the last couple of years and obviously played Walker Cup. So he's got a chance. He's got something about him. Amazing wedge player, short game, and hits it very straight. So there is a little bit of potential. There's 2 or 3 players there that could really step up to the mark.
Joe's down to single fingers, you know.
Well then, Joe, must have been that fitness program I gave to you a couple of years ago.
Well, actually, you know, it's funny. I would have been skeptical before about, like, geez, you know, relatively young or whatever. It was amazing to go. So I went to see Robbie one day and have a look at me, flexibility-wise.
Shane was actually in.
He was.
Before you, I think, yeah, I remember that.
And it's funny, like, people look at Shane and say he's not very fit or whatever, but, like, he is flexible. Like, he is able to do things that I guarantee you, if we went to do them now, you accept it, obviously. I'm sure you have a residual kind of, or natural flexibility. But I was kind of shocked. So you were taking me through different, well, turn as much as you can that way, jump off a height there, see what you can do, how far can you reach that way? And it was fairly pathetic. You know, I'd probably had 5, 6 years of office life behind me sitting in a chair. And, you know, at one point you were saying, well, so-and-so can jump that high and you're only that high, or, like, Shane can probably do that a bit more than you. And it was a real eye-opener that actually there's a level of fitness that you don't kind of recognise to swing the golf club as fast as they're all swinging it.
Yeah, if I can remember correctly, I think you were pretty strong with your lower body.
Yeah,
you
I played a lot of football, so legs were fine, but upper body, in terms of
upper
flexibility.
You're a bit stiff, but I think you were lucky enough the areas that were a bit stiff, they were easily
sorted out.
You can improve that quite easily. I would, for anyone that comes into me for the first time, it's just going to be a screening, testing kind of process, no matter what level they're at, and just to identify what you need to work at. You have to have a goal in mind. If you don't have a goal, you're wasting your time. So I sometimes get as much joy from like a 60-year-old winning his club championship. If Shane, obviously winning the Open was that little bit more special. Yeah.
Biggest lie I ever heard told her.
Did you go out five nights straight when the 60-year-old won the club championship?
No, I might have had a glass of wine that night. But it's like, and even like there's a couple of guys come into me this year and they couldn't play golf because they were in such pain after playing. Mm. So one guy in particular was thinking of giving it up. Because he was in so much pain from playing golf the previous day, and like I got him sorted out after a couple of sessions, and he's playing most days now. Like that, like things like that can mean a lot to me as well.
What's the website?
Canonperformance.ie.
Well, I don't have to recommend anything. I'd recommend it because you then sent me on a PDF of like these 10 or 15 stretches to do, and I spent about 6 months doing them. I noticed a big difference, and then, as can happen, you just kind of drift away from stuff. But I still have the PDF.
Yeah.
So it's kind of there for life, where I know these 10 basic things.
That was your profile. And like people, like I'd say, like if you ever talk to Porig has probably done two or three of the same exercises the last 20 years.
Sure.
That's just kind of like Achilles heel he's going to have to work on all the time. Shane has a couple of exercises that he'll always have to do.
Right.
I'm the same. Everyone's has that like DNA from a physical standpoint. You should have probably came back in after about 6 or 7 weeks and stepped it up to the next level. So it's all about progressing.
Yes,
like you're either getting better or you're getting worse. You're never going to stay still. So
Robbie, don't tell him too much, because when you offer Joe advice, he might take it, and then he just throws it right back at you, you know, especially when it comes to golf.
Did you send him a PDF afterwards?
No, I just told him to do a few things, and then he told me I was the worst coach in the world. But like, what can you say, you know?
Okay. Yeah, but just, like, the PDF has all the videos, because you know yourself. Like you go in and you see somebody and they show you all the exercises, but as soon as you leave the door,
totally forget.
Yeah. 25% or 50%. Some of them forget even all of them.
Is it all based around golf, or is it any athlete?
Any athlete. I've worked with Leash the last 2 years, which has been great. Really enjoyed that. I've worked with hurling teams. I've got an athletics background as well, so I've had track and field, golfers. But yeah, a high percentage would be golf.
And so I'd say a lot of people listening, it would have been my kind of thing, if they're not playing organized sport and they're just going to the gym, 20 minutes on the treadmill, different few weights, bomb, gone. And I'd say like the boring core work, stretches, all that stuff has been neglected. That's definitely what I was doing from memory, just neglecting all that stuff. So would that be your experience of people who come to you, that they're coming and they're like, yeah, no, I do the bicep curls and I do 20 minutes on the treadmill and that's kind of my gig?
Yeah, I think a lot of people when they come in who do go to the gym, I was the same when I went to the gym in like kind of early 20s, and I was like you. I was going to the treadmill. I was working on the beach body muscles, trying to look good, bicep curls, but it was actually detrimental to my golf. All of a sudden, I started getting really tight, couldn't turn properly. All of a sudden, I developed this kind of bent left arm on top of my backswing. I knew where I should be, but I couldn't get there because I was restricted. And it wasn't until kind of my late 20s when I got assessed, and it was kind of a light bulb moment. And I just went back to college then, and with the goal of trying to help people growing up not to make the same mistakes in the gym that I made.
It's hard to imagine there's any elite professional golfer now who wouldn't have a strength conditioning coach fully aware of all this. When you were starting out, and even when you were going through your career?
I like the way you just smile at me and say that. See,
Peter
the problem
was clearly obsessed with biceps.
Exactly. Myself and McGrain.
All that coke wouldn't have done you any good, that's for sure.
Myself and McGrain used to hang around together, and Harrington was over that side, and you know, we used to chat with him the odd time. Myself and McGrain, the only gym we knew was James, you know, and that's the way we did it.
You did a bit for a while, did you?
I tried a bit for a while, and I hit it sideways. Okay. And absolutely, I didn't know where it was going. I said, "Fuck, excuse me." I said, "We're going to get rid of this gym stuff." And then I.
How long did you give it?
Oh, probably about 3 months.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember going to Qatar. Qatar was the one, and I stood up on the first tee, and I just went, and I thought, "Oh, there's my gym." That was the end of that.
I'm sure the gym was the reason.
No, probably wasn't.
Maybe before you head out on the seniors tour. You know, we could do a documentary or something.
Yeah, we were talking. They're all talking about this documentary about me going back on the seniors tour.
How many years have we got left?
Only five. Well, four and a bit.
You see Robbie for at least 3 years in advance.
Yeah.
But I presume when you get to,
I'm going to be starting there shortly. Yeah.
You've got like flexibility is king, isn't it?
Yeah. A good kind of percentage you could use is the older you get. So like I'm 40 now, so 40% of my training should be mobility work. But there is strength exercises that actually help your mobility. A lot of strength work helps your mobility.
Yeah.
It's about having a balanced program, having a goal. So if somebody comes in to me, I say, okay, why are you here? What's the goal? And then they'll tell me, okay, I want to get from 15 handicap to 12. I have a swing coach. I want to get myself fit. My swing coach tells me I can't get into a certain position. Can you help?
Yeah.
So if you have a goal, set out a plan, you'll have your program, work on that. Just try and get a little bit better and be the best version of yourself you can be.
And look, far be it from any of us to tell Tiger Woods where he's going wrong, but would you have looked at Tiger down the years and thought, you're too big?
It's funny enough, when you actually see him in person, he's actually very lean. And I think that's the biggest shock people get when they go to a golf tournament for the first time and they see the golfers and they're like, Jesus, he's actually so lean.
Yeah.
They're not as big as they look on the TV.
No, that's true, to be fair.
It adds about a stone and a half. I'm made to believe.
These cameras are a disaster. Do me no favours at all.
It is incredible how lean they all are now. Mm. They all look like Premier League footballers, half of them.
Yeah.
At least.
With Shane, and just going back to Shane, Shane gets an awful lot of stick from the general public who don't know him about, they all think he doesn't work at his game or work at his physical fitness and stuff like that, you know. And I think it's right, probably now is a good time to say how much work he does do. And you're probably, you know, you'd know better than most people. Yeah. I probably know better than anybody. I think the listeners should hear, you know, how much Shane does, because I get it a lot of the time, Asher, you know, if Shane did this, he'd be better at that, or if he put more time in the gym and stuff like that. And I'm a firm believer of doing what you're capable of doing and, you know, not changing something. That nobody could change Shane's swing. Nobody could change, and I'm not saying change swings it like Jim Furyk, but, you know, it's for the amateurs coming up to learn not to change too much what we were talking about there, about their swing, but actually about their body physique as well. Would you agree with that one?
Yeah, and 100%. So, like, everyone has their biomechanics, their golf swing, and if you mess around with their mass too much, the biomechanics of their swing is going to change. In extremes lay danger. So if Shane went and lost 10 kgs, you'd probably fall out of the top 100 in the world.
Genuinely, really?
Genuinely, yeah. There has been cases in the past over the last 20 years of golfers who have lost significant mass and they've lost their games. I think Montgomery, the first year he didn't win the Order of Merit, he lost a lot of weight.
I often wonder if that's a case of they just have to give it a bit of time to get used to their new body shape. Maybe they panic too quickly and put the weight back on.
No. Like, there's some guys, if you've never heard of again, when they've lost the weight. Like Tim Herron lost a load of weight, lost his card, hasn't been heard of since.
So you actually don't just get used to your new slimmer size?
No, it's about change. If you change, if you have your pattern, you have your biomechanics, and if you make significant changes, it's almost like going to a new swing coach and changing your swing. It's going to have that much of an effect. So you've heard in the past of golfers taking, like, 2-3 years to come back from a swing change. Like Faldo was a classic one.
Yeah.
Tiger after he won the Masters. So it does take that long.
When did you start working with Shane?
This is our fifth year.
Right.
So.
And he, obviously, then he's what, mid-20s. He's around the place. He's not bulletproof. He's probably hearing a lot of what Peter mentioned there, what people are saying about him. Ah, if he did lose a bit of weight, imagine how good a golfer he'd be then if he just committed himself a bit more to his game, where everything you hear actually is he was always very committed to his game. From your point of view, when you're getting involved in him, are you aware of that he's hearing this and that maybe there's an external pressure on him to get into better shape that won't actually be beneficial to his career?
He is in pretty good shape. Like the game of golf has certain demands. For him, he's well able to play 6-7 rounds over a week, so practice rounds. He's never been like tired after them.
Yeah.
his mobility, his strength. He's very, very strong. His mobility is very great. He's great at the minute. So that's the demands. And as I said, like Shane, if you've seen pictures of him from 5 years ago compared to now, his shape has changed. His mass hasn't changed a whole lot, but he has lost a lot of fat and he's put on a lot of muscle as a result.
Yeah, I find whenever you meet him, he looks great.
Yeah, and a lot of people say that to me when they see him. Jesus, he's
just looks strong.
Yeah, he's a strong guy.
He's tall, big, strong. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, like I'm sure, like I think Shane has got a lot more secure in himself, and he's grown up, and he's got a lot wiser. I think this year the big thing for me is accepted things a lot better. And Neil's obviously done a lot of work on that regard. So like I think last week was a great example. He had a poor first round in Carnoustie. But like, he bounced back with three amazing rounds to finish, I think it was 11 or 12. So,
Claret jug helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you're going through a dodgy period, it's like, well, there's a good player in here.
Everything is right once you've won the Open.
Geez, Harrington is a man who's really like phenomenally dedicated. He went through a phase about 2, 3, 4 years ago where he was like, yeah, I'm going to put on weight now.
Yeah.
And it was the most Harrington thing ever.
Yeah, like, he was chasing, obviously, Liam Hennessy works with Shane, so Liam's been my mentor for the last 10 years. So. He was chasing club head speed, which is what he tends to do. He's obsessed by it.
He'll try anything.
So if you put on more mass, like technically you can actually generate more speed.
Okay.
So, and this is another thing with Shane. If we lost like 10 kgs, not only would he fall out of the top 100 in the world, he would actually significantly lose club head speed. So with golfers, like the guys like Rory, Justin Thomas, they use the ground. They're kind of more rotary kind of golfers. Whereas the bigger guys like Phil Mickelson, Lee Westwood, they're the guys that just use their mass to generate club head speed.
Okay.
So Porig was trying to put on mass to hit it further. That's the science behind it.
So are you looking at Mickelson now going, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, so as I said earlier on, in extremes lay danger. Like he lost some crazy amount.
2 stone.
Yeah.
He's lost over 2 stone.
What tournament was it before? Was it
British Open?
Yeah, like that was absolutely.
He didn't eat for 6 days before the British Open.
If I was a gambler, I would have been laying him all day. Okay.
And you would have been right.
Yeah.
I guess he's maybe just entered that stage of his life and his career where he's not worried about the danger. He's willing to take that risk and the slim chance that something just comes off.
Yeah, well, he's so competitive. Like all these guys are competitive animals. I'd say he's burning inside that he's not as competitive as he was. Maybe he's just trying something, just trying to get back to the level he was at maybe a year or two ago.
There was a picture from the beach recently. Like he hasn't become a soft, skinny guy. Like he's
solid. A big guy,
he's ripped. Mm. No, like there's muscle there. He wasn't just like, oh, he's slimmed down, but he's still kind of pudgy and soft. And obviously his calves are. Weirdly defined, like incredible. So, I don't know, that's going to be very interesting. But he actually looks strong for it. So, it'll be who knows
how. He trains hard, but he's been training for 20,
has he?
25 years, 30 years. So, he's had the same trainer for a long time. And his training age, so this is something I always talk about with younger athletes, like from a Gaelic football perspective, we're trying to build a training age of these guys so that they're ready for the hustle and bustle of senior football. It's the same working with young athletes now and golfers. We're trying to get their body ready to prepare to play championships where it could be 2 rounds in a day for 3 days in a row. It's about being robust. It's about getting your body strong enough and robust enough that you can play all this game of golf, because it's just quite a lot of demands on the body with all the twisting and turning and the amount of force that you put through your body. So,
you mentioned the Saturday night of the Open up in Portrush, you had a chance as a group, aside from Shane, to go and have a drink and sort of relax as much as you can relax when he's in that situation. It does seem, from watching from the outside, as if he's got a very good, tight, close-knit team around him, that a team he clearly trusts very well, but also a team that ye all seem to get on very well also.
Yeah, Neil is obviously, like, Shane and Neil are like their best pals, pretty much. Neil, I think I was thinking about this. The one thing that we all have in common is we all want Shane to be happy. There's no egos in the group. There's no kind of other kind of toss that we just want to get him as good as he can be and as happy as can be. And yeah, we all get on great. We have a lot of fun. And especially after the Open, we had a lot of fun. We had some great days and nights.
What are your emotions like when he's walking up 18? Because obviously people dream of holding the putt to win the Open on the 18th, but actually he had this sort of 20-minute experience of walking up the 18th, knowing it was in the bag.
Yeah, I was very, very calm. Obviously, the family were very emotional. I was just so happy for him, because he has had his bad days as well, and he deserved it because he does work hard. Just as Peter knows, he's just a genuine guy and just trying to get better. And he's just so competitive; like, he hates losing, and that's one ingredient of DNA that I'd be looking for in golfers. He's just so competitive, no matter what he's doing.
Does Neil, I don't say rule from the top down, but obviously he's very much on top of Shane's mental game as well. But everybody around him needs to be on top of Shane's mental game, that when he spends a day or two with you, that you're all on message, that you're all saying the same thing, that you're all keeping him in the same sort of state of mind, not just on tournament week, but throughout the year. Would you discuss that as a coaching team?
It's not that kind of setup where there's a boss. Like, I would, like, Shane is the boss, but he doesn't order people around. He knows that we all have his best interests at heart, and we're trying to just get him the best version of himself. We would have discussions from time to time if we feel like there's a, like, myself and Neil will have a couple of conversations about, like, physical stuff, and I'm sure the management are on that side as well. But no, we all work great together, and it's been a great year. So
it's incredible from where he's come from. Sorry, Joe.
Go on.
From last year, walking off the 18th in Carnoustie, I was meant to meet Dermot for a drink or a cup of tea, whatever it was. It was on the Wednesday afternoon or Thursday afternoon. I didn't get to see him. And then for Dermot and Shane to split then after the Thursday round. And then a year later, pretty much, to the day, because for the tournament-wise, he wins the Open. So it's an incredible, story that's there, but it's an incredible turnaround of form that Shane had.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I would say, like, obviously he went and his brother was on the bag for a few weeks and he had a good week in the PGA, but I wouldn't say it started from there. I'd say it started from Abu Dhabi this year.
Right.
We were out in Dubai he was there for a few weeks. I was there for about a week with him. We did some training. I remember in the gym we had a conversation. He said he was going to win twice this year. So I said to him after the Open, you're going to have to change the goals a little bit.
You were like, I'd like a win bonus structure. what's the protocol there if you're with Shane and you're very much working with Shane, but equally you're a professional yourself and you want to do well, if two or three other players go, would you mind, can you coach me too? Like, would you like to have a stable of professional athletes working under you on tour?
I worked with Paul Dunn for a couple of years, and I've worked with a couple of the Challenge Tour guys on and off as well. So,
you'd be open to it?
It depends. Like, Shane's my, I guess, number one guy, and I have a big focus towards him, and I'm trying to get him. Like, he's obviously got a lot of career goals, and we're trying to help him achieve that. We're also great friends, and I'm sure if somebody wanted to work with me, I'd have a conversation with him. Mm. But Shane's such an easygoing guy. I wouldn't say there'd be any issues.
Yeah.
He hasn't fell out with many people on the tour over the years.
No, it doesn't seem that way. But it's the your average person on the street who's coming in, that's your bread and butter client.
Yeah, I the one rule I have, I work with somebody who wants to get better.
Okay.
If somebody comes in, like, over the years you've had people and they come in and they're just almost like they're ticking off a box, or I must try this, or like they're not that committed.
He's not looking at me, by the way, Joe. He's looking at you.
I did get better. I did the stretches for months.
Yeah, he has. He's been working. He's got better. But I'll work with anyone who wants to get better. So if I have that commitment off them, as I said, I'm excited about. I love coaching. Mm. I'm excited about making people better, whether it's an individual or the leash guys. It's all about getting people better. That's what excites me.
Yeah. Very good.
And does Shane winning the Open change your career? Suddenly is the phone...
doubled his prices.
Phone hopping?
Tripled.
Is everybody wondering...
It's actually interesting. There's been a few more inquiries, but a couple of my regular clients, actually, I contacted them just to ask them, you're getting in, whatever, next week, you're due to come in a few weeks ago. And they actually said, I didn't want to annoy you, I thought you'd be too busy, which is actually... not exactly the case. Like, I have my regulars, so I'll always be looking after them. So I think there could be a little bit of a perception out there that I'm going to be turning away business.
You're too big time now.
Yeah, it's not that way at all. Like, as I said, I'll work with anyone. I'll always reply to anyone who wants to get better, and that's the way it is at the minute.
Is there any one particular moment of that week after Portrush that stands out that'll always stay with you?
It was kind of interesting. We obviously, again, Shane has predicted himself pretty well this year. So the week before the Open, we played golf. Myself, Brian, his manager, Alan Clancy, and Shane, we played Portmarnock. Myself and Brian actually beat Shane and Alan over the nine holes. I don't think I've played well since, actually. But we went for dinner. But Shane actually said that day, when I win my next tournament, we're going to do what the footballers do. We're going to go for like a 3 or 4 day party. And funny enough, he wins the next week, and he stuck to his promise.
Sure did.
But yeah, we went to the Boar's Head. The Sunday night after was brilliant. Just great night. I think we left at 6:30 in the morning. Shane texted me Boar's Head for the next day. I went in there for a few hours. The South of Ireland was on that week, and I was due to play. And I actually drove down on the Tuesday, played 14-hole practice round. I think I was 8 under. So I was like, I told you, Lahinch is a special place. But on the way down, Brian, his manager, texts me and says, we're having a team party Wednesday night. I was like, okay, I can't miss that, because I actually said to Brian we should have a team party at some stage. But I didn't know it was going to be on the Wednesday. So I withdrew from the South and went back to that, and we had a team party, went for dinner, and that was special, just all his team and close friends. That was a great night.
So what you're kind of saying, I suppose, is that they cost you the South of Ireland 2019 because you were red hot. You were ready to go.
I don't think I would have lasted. I might have got
Saturday morning. So
the South of Ireland would have.
It's your fitness, Robbie. How you thought about your fitness?
It would have been 8 rounds. I don't think I would have lasted the pace.
It's tough going, actually. It's a lot of golf.
A lot of golf, and there's a trick to winning them as well. You kind of need to peak at the right time. So the match play events that I've won, I've peaked at the matches I needed to play well. Mm. I did, and matches you could just
squeeze it out. Yeah.
So there's a secret to winning them.
Yeah.
So playing wise, what are the ambitions for the 40s?
Yeah, I'm still mad keen. I guess with my career now, I just have to make a plan next year and see what events I'm going to play in. There was a big push to play the British Amateur this year, obviously being in Portmarnock. And I practiced a lot up until that, but I didn't play well for the few weeks around that, and kind of lost a little bit of enthusiasm for it because I wasn't playing great. But yeah, I'm back playing decent enough at the minute. So we'll still belt away, and I'm sure by the time the West of Ireland comes around, I'll be highly motivated to play in that, if I'm around.
Sorry, I know we're wrapping up. What's the average handicap of the guys who are playing in these events?
9.
You have to.
It's definitely not 9.
Is everyone scratch or above?
Oh, it's better. It's like, if you want to get into West of Ireland, you need to be +1.
Do you?
What are you off?
I've been +3 for the last 10 years. I'm back to +2.4 at the minute.
Okay.
I never got to +4.
And would you play in your weekly Saturday comp? The odd time?
I haven't done.
Would some of the guys do that off +2, +3, +4, and that's a big
Some of them would. Yeah. I think that's one thing probably I didn't do enough this year. I didn't play enough of them kind of medals and keep myself sharp. It's kind of hard to rock up to these events without a bit of match sharpness. Mm.
We didn't have time for our usual in-depth production meeting ahead of this to, you know, plan out the show.
Yes.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't know. Nothing urgent.
The Shriners Hospital Open is on this week on the PGA Tour. Brooks Koepka is the favourite. Patrick Cantlay, Bryson DeChambeau, Adam Scott, Webb Simpson, Hideki Matsuyama, all in the field. Koepka was asked this week about not winning the Player of the Year award. And he said, well, look, LeBron James has only won MVP 4 times. And everybody knows he's the best player of his generation.
Nice. He was saying as well, he's practicing hard now. Like, unlike in previous kind of periods.
He might get worse.
Who knows? It might work for him. Yeah. The other thing, Cameron Champ's win was kind of amazing as well. We'll talk about that next week. But that was an amazing story with his granddad, who's not very well watching at home. So that was a big story in the PGA Tour.
It's in Houston this week, isn't it? Did I see that the presenter, what's his name, American lad from he does Sky, he got an invitation to play this week.
Rich Beam?
Rich Beam.
The Houston, I thought Shriners was normally Vegas.
Is it? Mm. Okay, well then maybe the week later. I just see on Twitter, there you go.
What was going on with Shane in the Open Championship shop at St. Andrews? Was this a set up for TV moment? He wasn't just randomly caught in there.
It was very funny. I believe he was asked to go in and take a picture with the staff. So
that's all right.
He was in there to see how many Shane Lowry pictures there were. To make sure.
What's the copyright on these?
I actually thought it was probably to go in and buy so many flags.
You
can't get them.
Yeah.
Can't get them anymore. So
I've heard him say on seven or eight occasions, I'll never get tired of signing these, and I'm just wondering how long that can continue for.
Didn't Harrington buy pretty much every flag in the place when he won his? Because he knew, I want to sign it. On the day, at Carnoustie, I think. Got as many flags going.
As well as I know Shane, there's no way he'd be in that shop trying to boost his ego.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
100%. Me or you won, though, we'd be in that shop for days.
Well, speak for yourself.
That shop ain't cheap, no matter how much money you win. Yeah, you don't want to be throwing money around in the Open Championship shop. 80 quid for a bloody hat.
As a winner, you might get a reduction. Don't know that question.
The unseen benefits of being Open Champion. Robbie, thanks a million for coming
in. Thanks, Robbie.
CanonPerformance.ie.
That's it.
Don't just go once. Go back time and time again, even with the PDF, which is
if you want to keep progressing,
if you want to keep progressing in life. Peter, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Spawell, Golf Academy. Peter Lowry, statue outside. You'll recognise it off the M50. No. Joe, good guest appearance.
Thanks, man. Enjoyed the chat.
Yeah. Did my very...
No mention this week of his famous...
Oh, well, I was down at Ballyhaunas on Sunday, and those people...
I actually have to go.
Ballyhaunas Facebook page is where you want to go for their brilliant challenge day on the 19th of October.
It's disgusting.
They said, Joe, you're more than welcome to come down.
Really? I mean, I hear it's a wonderful club.
One of the best nine holes in all of Ireland.
Yeah.
This episode of Golf Weekly brought to you in association with La Cala, Spain's largest golf resort, and Irish-owned by FBD Hotels and Resorts. The website is lacala.com. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Good luck. Starter kid right here.